This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. So as the weather warms up, we're outside gardening or doing yard work. There are so many opportunities for skin issues, right? And for me, it's always a mystery to know what's going to irritate my skin, but I'm definitely out there itching and scratching. But the good news is Active Skin Repair always seems to save the day. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. It's also safe and non-toxic, making it suitable for use on all skin types, all parts of the body, and even on rosacea, eczema, and acne-prone skin. Here's what I want you to do. Visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use code JOYFUL. Again, that's www.activeskinrepair.com. Find out more about the product and get 20% off your order when you use the code JOYFUL. Hey, welcome to the Joyful Courage Podcast, a place for inspiration and transformation as we try and keep it together while parenting our tweens and teens. This is real work, people. And when we can focus on our own growth and nurturing the connection with our kids, we can move through the turbulence in a way that allows for relationships to remain intact. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am your fearless host. I'm a positive discipline trainer, space holder, coach, and the adolescent lead at Sproutable. I am also the mama to a 20-year-old daughter and 17-year-old son, walking right beside you on this path of raising our kids with positive discipline and conscious parenting. This show is meant to be a resource to you, and I work really hard to keep it real, transparent, and authentic so that you feel seen and supported. Today is an interview, and I have no doubt that what you hear will be useful to you. Please don't forget, sharing truly is caring. If you love today's show, please pass the link around, snap a screenshot, post it on your socials, or text it to your friends. Together, we can make an even bigger impact on families all around the globe. I'm so glad that you're here. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, listeners. I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm so excited to introduce my friend, Douglas Haddad. Douglas is an award-winning middle school teacher, best-selling author, parenting and education advisor, international speaker, and award-winning filmmaker. He is the author of The Ultimate Guide to Raising Teens and Tweens and the brand new children's picture book, Maya McClure, The Brave Science Girl, The Toad Cave. Douglas has been awarded Teacher of the Year in his Connecticut school district and has served as a teacher ambassador in public education in the state of Connecticut. He has also been awarded as a Fund for Teachers Fellow for engaging students in transformational learning experiences that address equity, diversity, and inclusion. Haddad has taught over 3,000 students in his 24 years as an educator, working with children from all different backgrounds and abilities, and has helped them transition from being kids into young adults. I met Doug in the UAE last year when we got to speak at the Parenting Unconference, and can give a testimony. I remember being at the Grand Mosque with you. That's where we hung out and connected. And your enthusiasm for capturing as much of your experience as you could for your students was so sweet and so memorable. I'm so glad to have you on the show, Doug. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be there, an honor to meet you, and an honor to be on the podcast with you, Casey.
Yay. So today we're going to talk about encouraging discouraged students, specifically those in middle school. And I know, I'll just let you in, Doug. So my kids are 18 and 20. So I've noticed that a lot of my conversations kind of follow where my kids are at. So all of you listeners with middle schoolers, you can have that, yes, finally moment. We are talking about middle school kids specifically on this show. So before we get into the meat of it all, Doug, what drew you to middle school?
It's a funny story because it's, I got drawn to it by happenstance, to be honest with you, because my first ever job that I applied for out of school was to be a college professor at the age of 23. So I came out of school with a bachelor's degree in secondary education to be a biology or some science teacher. I got a master's degree in biology. And I just loved college. It's all I really knew. So I was interested in being a community college professor because you needed a master's. Mm-hmm. I just really enjoyed it. Now, I just finished being a teacher in chemistry of nutrition, and I was teaching also the lab portion as well as the lecture. And I just really enjoyed the interaction. And maybe partly I was very close in age to the college kids, 22, 23 years old. And what was funny about it is that when I applied for the job, the professor said to me, he goes, "You have so much enthusiasm, so much energy." And I'm like, "Well, thank you. I'm so excited for this." He goes, "You don't want to be a college professor with that kind of energy." I go, "Yeah, I love college kids." They're like, "Yeah, you'd be more suited for like the younger kids. You're certified, what, 7 through 12? You're more middle school." I'm like, "Middle school is like the worst years of my life. No, thank you." But he's the first that said that. So long story short is when I was finishing up my master's degree, the department supervisor, Leeds Carluccio, God bless him, what a great man. He knew somebody at the school that I was, you know, up in Simsbury, Connecticut. This is a place I've never been in the same state up north, but there was the department supervisor of a middle school there that he was friendly with. And what he told me is he goes, "They want you." And I said, "They do?" And I said, he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Just got to go up there." I go, "Simsbury, where's that?" He goes, "Oh, it's up kind of near Massachusetts." And I said, "That's probably like a 50-minute drive one way. Just tell them I'll pass. No, thank you." So about a week goes by and all of a sudden he goes, "You know what? They still want you." He goes, "You have no idea how good that school district is." So long story short, he goes, "Put on a tie, put on a suit, get up there." I did. I had an interview. After the first interview, they offered me the contract. And 24 years later, Casey.
Wow. I'm
still there. So
are you at the same school?
Same school. Middle school, it's just unbelievable. I was in the same classroom for 20 years. We just had a big new renovation. So I have a new classroom, which actually looks like more like a college room with all the storage and the lab stuff. But yeah, same classroom.
Do you have any students of your students? Have you had that
yet?
Yes,
my first one this year. Yep.
Wow.
And I was like, "Oh, that's your mom? Oh, yeah. My mom loved you back." And she said, "You had more hair back then." And I said, "Well, it's called age."
Yeah. Thanks for pointing it out.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's exactly, I love it to this day. You know, I never thought middle school because they're so, you know, young and just kind of have a lot of energy, but they're old enough to get it and they're young enough to be excited about it. It's like the perfect blend.
Oh, yeah. Thank God for people like you. I mean, I think about 24 years ago, I mean, and what you've seen, there's this woman, her name is Emily Shirkin. She was on the podcast talking about, she had been a middle school teacher, and now she consults around screen, being intentional, being tech intentional as parents. Mm. And one of the things she talks about is just in her experience in the classroom, she started pre-smartphone, as did you.
Yes.
And watching, like when you kind of lift up and out and reflect on how things are different.
Boy.
Today than they were 24 years ago, like what comes up for you?
Oh man. I mean, you're talking about like, I was starting, there wasn't even email. I was on a blackboard.
I know, right? I think about that when I was in college.
You know what I mean?
I do.
It's been wild. There's been so many things that kids nowadays, they have to navigate. So I would say some of the significant like changes you're looking at, you're fundamentally, well, first of all, children desire three things: to be loved, heard, and understood. All right. So those are things that have never really changed. But in this time frame, we're seeing so many aspects of kids, their anxiety levels have gone up. You know, a lot of it's due to COVID. A lot of it's also due to the technology boom that continues to take place, like with the smartphones. So students have more access to their fingertips than ever before, you know, and that's a big problem. I see probably about 8 or 9 out of 10 of my students, ages 11 to 14, they are, and they have smartphones. And it really is not good for their health. I mean, science even says that for a developing mind and the EMFs, all the radiation that comes out, it's just not healthy for them. So the overuse of technology, the leading to social media misuse, we are still in the infancy phase of this. And in kids, there isn't really a class. I could tell you we're starting at the middle school to incorporate things. We're showing videos like Screenagers. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah. I had Delaney on the podcast. I've interviewed the gal that made that movie.
Yes, that's awesome. Yeah, it's great. And things have even changed from that. movie.
Yeah, that's dated. That's like old news movie. Yeah.
Truly, you know? So I would say, you know, really just a lot of that, the electronic devices, you know, they want things quick and easy. I've noticed too in the classroom that I really have to hold them a little bit more in guiding them because their resilience to task or want to initiate a task is lower. Their ability to communicate has kind of gone by the wayside, to be honest with you. And that's both writing, because quite honestly, they have text and everything gets corrected for them or turned into a word that's interesting, that's not corrected, but they still don't know how to spell correctly. And they're speaking too. They don't know how to handle conflict one-on-one like you and I would have growing up. For them, it's just like they get frozen. And when we play games, even like in our area, it's like, okay, Mr. Head, what are we playing today? Versus like, oh, here, I'm going to give you a few balls. You guys are going to figure out something. They need to be guided on a lot. So those kind of changes have happened that I've seen over the years.
So I loved, heard, and understood. I also appreciate that's what they need. And that's what they, and there's like a perception piece around that too, right? Because, you know, as I work with parents, they're like, I do love them. I am trying to understand them. And it's like, and it's not enough unless their perception is of feeling heard, feeling love and understood. Do you see any difference now versus earlier in your career as far as not that they don't need that, but that like that they're experiencing that?
Well, that's a very good question, because I feel that as parents, it's important for us, and I call this listening to understand versus listening to reprimand.
Yeah.
In our minds, you know how when somebody's talking a lot of times, we're thinking, what do we want to say back? And a lot of kids.
What's the point I want to land?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Versus just let's listen, non-judgmental. And I still use those old tried and true tactics with kids where I say, well, tell me a little bit more how you're feeling. And then I ask a lot of questions. And that's what kids really desire. So has that really changed? No. Loved, heard, and understood have been foundational and fundamental for a long, long time. And they're just the basic needs. But perception is everything. That was a quote I used to have on the board when I was 22, 23 years old and first started. And I used to always have a perception is everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really is, like you said.
What about discouragement in the classroom? And I promise, listeners, we're not just going to spend all of our time talking about how hard it is. But what is, like, have you seen a shift or a trend in what discouragement looks like in the classroom?
Yeah. Well, some of the basics in the classroom, you know, it can vary in a lot of different forms. You know, as a teacher, you know, I see it in body language when somebody's like slumped in their chair, or their arms are crossed, you know, their eyes are wandering, they're fidgeting. You know, I see if they're engaged in the lesson or not. Like I said, a lot of kids' attention has gone down with the technology boom, because they're used to quick and easy. Google, give me the answer. I don't have to think. I also see like when a kid's disengaged, there's a decrease in participation in the classroom. There's also more of an avoidance for taking risks and afraid to fail. There's more of that aspect. And I think, again, I hate to blame it, but kids are always looking at social media, at others' popularity, their likes, their followers. And do I match up? Am I not good enough? If I say the wrong thing. So there's more of that. They're on stage, you know, both in person and digitally and virtually. So that's what I've seen. Now, as for teachers, here's another thing I see. The past few years have been quite the challenge, as I can attest to. It's been exhausting physically, teaching in front of a computer and in person for a hybrid for, you know, a couple of years. I did it day in and day out with a mask, 7-8 hours a day. And it's tough. And teachers are less emotionally available for their students. So this has resulted in a lot of burnout, but as well, that feeling of overwhelming has caused a disconnect. And that's what I've seen. Like a lot of students used to always rush in, you know, to the classroom after hours and talk with me and hang out. Now it's a little bit different. You know, that connection isn't face-to-face as much. I still have kids coming in and say, hi, Mr. Haddad. But the phone has really taken over a lot of that connection, unfortunately.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
no,
it's such a discouraging conversation because it just feels impossible. Like, unless, you know, I have this fantasy of every parent on the planet starting today, no phones till you're 16 years old.
Yes. Oh, 16.
Or even longer. Fantastic. But 16 would be good, don't you think? Oh, we don't let them drive.
Yes.
But we're going to let them like explore the world unsupervised. I mean, anyway.
Yeah.
That's my
Agreed.
Soapbox. I can't deal. But I feel like I can't talk to teachers without talking about that because it's, I mean, and I look at my kids and I, you know, my son and I, we compare our phone use. I'm not really great either.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Well, yeah.
And I'm like, how are you accruing all of these minutes when you're at school? And he'll be like, well, Mom, you know, because at his school, they're on A day, B day. Class times are these long periods of time. But really, the engaged part is the first 30 or 45 minutes. And then they've got, from what I'm understanding from my kiddo, like 45 minutes to kill, which of course I'm like, how about a book? But he's like, you know, nobody cares. And so, you know, does it feel also like it's such an uphill battle with the phones?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you have, you know, check them in at the door every day you walk into the classroom, but you only have so many minutes with them. Like, I just want to say thank you for your service and holy shit, it must be really hard.
Yeah, well, it starts from the top. It really does. And the parameters you put in place as a leader are very important. And I'm talking about from the very top for superintendents and down to principals, you know, and all the team leaders at the schools and supervisors. But I'm a big advocate that the phones stay off and away in the locker, you know?
Yeah.
However, I understand parents' perspective, their concerns. They want to get a hold of their child.
Why?
I know.
I say that. I totally text my kid when he's at school.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Why? But how you doing today?
Usually it's really important.
Yeah. Mom, I'll go to the bathroom. Hold on. Can I go to the bathroom? I said, oh yeah. Can you leave your phone there? Oh no, my mom. I'm just kidding. I don't need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Sorry. Hey, everybody. Listen, I'm so excited to give you an update on Songfinch. Songfinch delivers. I shared last month that I was going to have them create an original song for Ian, my graduating senior. Well, the song is done, and the process of co-creating it with the artist on Songfinch was so cool. I got to provide details and ideas, and then the musician of my choice wrote up the lyrics, put it to the music that I picked, and the results are so cool. I can't wait to surprise Ian with it. I will be sure to record it and share it with all of you. Songfinch is an innovative service that lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and it lasts forever. After moving through their process, you get the final results in 4 to 7 days. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free. So you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care. Start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. Go to songfinch.com/joyful and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, which is a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/joyful. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/joyful.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
But it's true, you know, that's the battle a little bit. And that's where, getting back to your point, that 16-year-old. So there's the pledge to eighth. And that,
right.
Can we push? And in all fairness and reasoning and understanding the social emotionalness of a child saying, oh, if I don't have a phone, I'm going to be picked on. Mom, Dad, you don't understand. I'm going to be out of the loop. Okay, well, if all parents band together in an ideal world.
Yes.
Then it really is not necessary until, like you said, you know, 16 or so. But I get it in the real world. If you can push to eighth grade, and eighth grade usually in a lot of districts is middle school, like the end of middle school for high school, that's that year where they can learn how to use social media well.
Yeah.
So, and that, and they can make some mistakes here and there. And then when they get to high school, they'll be, you know, in a better spot. Maybe they'll have more friend groups and connections and they'll feel more comfortable going in. But when you start talking about kids getting phones in like third grade, fourth, fifth, it's like sixth, I don't know.
Don't do that. If you're listening and your third grader has a phone, take it away. Stop that. It is not appropriate or needed or necessary and damaging. It is damaging. So
I joke with children.
Not that I want to shame anyone, but I kind of do.
Yeah, I get it. And I tell children, I ask my students, I said, how many of you, your childhood has ended? And they look at me, what? And I said, okay, let me word this differently. How many of you have smartphones? And they And then how many of you looked at your time usage, like you said? And then they start making jokes about it. Oh, I spent 4 hours and plus minutes on here. And I go, and were you on it at school? And mom said, well, no, we can't have it at school.
Oh, listen, Doug, I've got people listening who are like, 4 hours.
It's nothing.
Please let that be how much my kid's on their phone, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And we have to understand that a lot of these kids have one-to-one devices now since COVID. So they're on the screen on their Chromebooks or whatever their, you know, MacBooks or iPads at school a decent amount of time, some more than others. And then they're at home. And it's just that, you know, that whole vicious circle of, okay, well, it's time to go to bed. You know, well, that blue light is stimulating that cognitive arousal. They're not getting sleep. They're coming into school sleepier than ever. You know, so I'm seeing that more so as well. That's another issue.
But. Okay. Let's haul ourselves out of the smartphone rabbit hole we just got into. Thank you, everyone, for going on that trip with us. We see you. We know. We're all feeling it. Okay. So here's really what I want to like play around with you. I have a lot of clients and people who have kids in middle school, and I have some really good friends who are middle school teachers, right? And so it's so interesting to hear what's challenging from both sides. And so I am thinking you are in the trenches, right? You are someone who obviously cares deeply about kids and are super committed to best practices and leadership. You know, you are, you know, a leader in your school and you are navigating parents and parental expectations. Right. And, you know, some of our kids temperamentally, skill wise, they're tough kids.
That's right.
And I'm wondering, I'm curious because I know there's listeners who have those kids. Mm-hmm. And when I coach parents around talking to schools, I always encourage them to go into a conversation expecting like we are team this kid. So how can we stay solution focused for this kid? And I guess, I don't know that that's how every parent shows up. So like, what has been your experience with working with parents of kids that are having a hard time in the classroom? And what do you wish that they knew or like, if you could give a message, what would it be?
Absolutely.
Calm down.
Absolutely. I think no parent, first off, wants to hear that their child is a misbehavior or disruptive. Nobody wants to hear, because that's a reflection, right, on us. We did something wrong.
Right.
And a lot of times then I hear them sort of talking for their child and making excuses and all that, but we're not trying to ever pass judgment or blame. We are there. And the thing is, with that said, addressing disruptive behavior is, like you said, a collaborative approach and always should be, you know, centered on the student. So it's between the parents, it's between the teachers, and oftentimes you bring in the student as well. You know, we want them involved in it. So I'd recommend for the parent to ask the teacher for specifics on what they're seeing as disruptive. And that will actually give a lot more insight for a follow-up discussion at home with your child. And I can tell you as a teacher, you know, I've seen some students who are repetitively disruptive. You and I talked off the air a little bit with that. And after multiple attempts at unsuccessfully redirecting, you know, explicitly stating and repeating classroom expectations, moving their seat, no matter what the tiered interventions that got implemented, we must realize there's underlying stuff that's going on with kids. So that's where we really have to take a step back, because we're seeing it, whether it's being at home, whether it's something they don't feel they can match up to their peers, something's going on, they're being socially excluded, isolated. They're often acting out to be accepted. You know, there's that love, heard, and understood and accepted, and get attention any way they can and as an outlet. So anyway, you know, what can we do? Well, first off, we can involve children in open discussions, and we can, as I mentioned, listen to understand, listen to their perspective without any judgment and try to understand their point of view. But we can't just sit there, you know, willy-nilly and just always listen without establishing clear expectations for behavior at home, at school, and consistently reinforce the rules and consequences. Mm-hmm. It has to be a system in place, because if there's not, the child will, first off, if you think that there's a system in place, does your child know that there's a system? Because they may say, well, I didn't know I had to do that. Or I didn't know that I was going to be grounded for this. So make it very clear. I would say too, as a teacher, I'm a firm believer in this. And as a parent, I am too, as well, of encouraging self-reflection, where we help our children, right, reflect on their actions and what the consequences were. You know, we see the impact of their behavior on themselves and let them see it. That fosters a sense of self-responsibility and awareness, quite frankly. So again, really exploring these possible causes I mentioned, where underlying issues like academic struggles, I'd say every parent look at their friend group, or, you know, what's that looking like, the social challenges, and look at their emotional difficulties, because those are the spurs for the kinds of behaviors taking place.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking about one particular client. You know, the other thing of hearing that your kid's been disruptive, like, you know, there's the situation where it's like, what? This is a new thing, right? And there's also the situation of, yeah, like this is kind of the, this is who my kid is, right? And that discouragement of the parent. I know when my son was in middle school, if he had a really good relationship with the teacher, he was rock solid. And when it didn't feel like there was a good relationship, he was more likely to be disruptive, you know, and he and I would talk about that and like, how can you connect? But I also saw, and I'm wondering, seeing as you're a leader of teachers and, you know, just because somebody's a teacher does not mean they're, you know, we all have good people at jobs and not great people at jobs. But how would you encourage a parent who can see, like, it's obvious and, you know, they have a tough kid and it's obvious this teacher doesn't like my kid, doesn't want my kid in the classroom, but that it would be so useful for that teacher to nurture relationship with the student as far as that being a place of shifting behavior? What are some ways of like starting that conversation with a teacher who's discouraged?
Oh, absolutely. So you can do that. And this happens a lot of times where parents, I can see, who are truly invested in their child. They see they're struggling across the board or they're struggling with a particular student. I would suggest for the parent to actually contact, if you can, directly the teacher and have a conversation. Say, I just wanted to let you know a little bit about my child and, you know, what makes them tick, just so you know, because I want to thank you for all that you do. And I know it must not be easy trying to hit every single kid, but maybe it would make your job a little bit easier. And to have that connection with my child would really mean the world to them. And I know that would be important, you know, for me too, as well as a parent, because I see my child coming home and I just want to let you know what I see. And I also want to let you know that here's what my child really likes and here's how, you know, they would connect. So really being open and honest and transparent, because you're right. I mean, in any profession, there's great, there's good, there's fair, and there's poor. Mm-hmm. But like, we're all, you know, big kid, or we're all children underneath the layers of our age. And we just show how much, as parents, we appreciate the teachers and what they're doing and say how important it is for our child to connect with them, that shows that we care. And then the teacher's being heard and understood and valued. And believe me, that makes a big difference in having that behind the scenes conversation. It happened with coaches that I've had over the years. Like, my parents have spoken with coaches who have not been fair, have not been nice, and behind the scenes have said a few things and then given me an opportunity. And then that connection worked itself out much better than it could have went south about that.
Yeah. And I heard you kind of say this, like, there obviously is always expectations at home, right? Or not that there always is, but we would hope that there is, right? And relationship and parents doing their work at home. And then I think too, sometimes there's a little bit of tension when a kid's having a hard time at school and the message is to the parent, like, you need to do something. You're not doing enough, which really is like, this kid needs to be punished.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
No.
And
I know. That's tough.
It's tough, Right? Because in the meantime, and granted, there are definitely households that perhaps are, you know, permissive or neglectful, and their structure is what is needed. There's also households that are way on the other end of that.
Authoritarian. Right? Yeah, right.
Right, which is also not helpful.
Right.
So how do you, like, what do you think about that?
You know, we're talking right now about middle school, kind of tween and teen, early teen years. And we must realize that the prefrontal cortex, you know, the area of the brain too, that is for the rational thinking, the decision making and all that, is not fully developed until the mid-20s. So these are kids that are going to change rapidly. There's going to be a lot of hormonal imbalance and changes and situational and maturational crisis. So it's so important for parents to stay educated. And that's why one of my big dreams would be to make it an absolute mandate when you become a parent that you have to take courses. Now,
yeah,
how can you do that? You can't without some incentive. So there should be some governmental assistance or at the state level to award parents who choose to actually educate themselves, because people say they want change or the world's corrupt or, you know, I don't like how things are. Well, you have to change your understanding to change the next generation to build from there. That stuff has to happen. So
feel free to go to besproutable.com and get all your...
That's right. That's where you need to go, everybody. 100%. Yeah. So yeah, and that's what I would definitely say to that. But also even more so is if you really want to get something that's consistent, I'm a huge fan of this. And Casey, tell me what you think. Is that family contract? Do you guys have that? Or do you know of any of your clients you work with? You talk with?
Well, we talk about agreements and we talk about family meetings.
Yep.
That's a big positive discipline tool. And I know Julietta talks about a family charter, and it's very collaborative. And I think that if we're talking about any kind of like contract, because I think we're pretty close in age.
Yeah.
Like a contract in my teen years was, here's all the things you have to do to be able to drive your car, sign on the dotted line.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Or else.
Yeah, that's not what I promote. I promote, like, let's come up with an agreement around how you're going to stay safe, and we're going to create a win-win. We're going to counteroffer and offer and counteroffer until we get to a place that we both feel is good. And then we're going to sign on the dotted line. And we're also going to understand that there's going to be push up against this, and we'll come back to it and see if it's still relevant, if it needs to be tweaked or played with. Right. So, yeah, I think I get triggered in the word contract.
Yeah.
I think of my dad, like, here you go.
Here's a guy.
Sign it.
Yeah. Like a top down. No, I love that holistic approach. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's great. I mean, you have every kid, you know, if they can write it, if they're very young, they'll verbalize it. But have it written down, like, what does an ideal family look like? And I'd say this to all parents.
I love that.
What does it look like? And then hash it all out. They could say, well, at least one family meal together. We don't have cell phones at the table. There's no yelling or screaming. We're having a family fun night, at least, I don't know, I would say every night, but, you know, realistically.
Your kids are little.
I know, mine are little, yeah. Once maybe a week. Yep. But I would say things that, and then you have to have it in the agreement that what are we going to then do if that is not adhered to? Like, what can we personally do to uphold our end of the agreement? And if it's not adhered to, what's the price of payment? It could be losing a privilege of something or doing an extra contribution. Or if we say like a bad word by accident as an adult, money goes, you know, into the account. You know, although that would be baiting, the children would want you to keep saying those things.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of stuff that gets everybody on the same page, and having it like in an open area, almost like on the wall or hung down. And like you said, you can come back to and revisit and amend it. It's not hard fact.
Yeah.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard, and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Well, and I think one place that I would push back would be, especially if the kids are younger, as they get older, I think it's logical to say, you know, if then, right? Like the consequence for this is that, as long as it's related and reasonable and respectful. But I wonder, though, a little bit about, okay, what's making it difficult to adhere to this? Like, it's so funny. I just told you I got off this interview with Julietta, who's mm-hmm. our mutual friend and my colleague. And we were talking about firmness, right? And what it means to be firm. Mm-hmm. And especially with positive discipline, we don't really, I mean, other than natural consequences, we're way more focused on solutions than we are. This is what is going to happen to you if you don't do the thing. And so this just gets me thinking, and this is a great place to kind of recognize, oftentimes, we're all doing the best we can with the tools we have in the moment. So when mischief making happens or mistakes are made, then circling back around, okay, this is our expectation. This is our co-created agreement. Mm-hmm. What's making it hard to meet that agreement? And what's the problem that needs to be solved so that we can continue to show up this way? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there's also times where there's a persistent, consistent pushback that might actually be like, okay, you know, incentive could be useful here, but I really would encourage people to think about first, you know, what's making it difficult? What are the missing skills for this kid to show up in a way that's expected, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more because that's what it comes down to. There's some hole or gap or deficit that they're trying to fill, whether it's a longing for attention, whether they're trying to make up for a lack of a skill or an understanding in something. So you're 100% right. You want to really be a problem solver or a sleuth
with
your child and have them talk. And I'm going to say once again, try to do it without having an agenda, which you're going to say, listen to understand, not judge, and be there, be available. So, important.
Yep. Drop the agenda at the door, which listeners, I know it's not easy. It's not easy to drop the agenda or drop the judgment. And it's so important. Do you know Ross Green's work? Have you read Ross Green's
book? Yeah.
Lost at School. Did you read Lost at
School? Yes.
That was the first book of his that I read. And I just, you know, lagging skills has always stuck with me. And I love holding our kids, whether they're our students or our teenagers, as, again, doing the best they can with the tools they have in the moment. And what we know about brain development and adolescence is they spend a lot of time in their amygdala. They are highly emotional, right? And when we're in our amygdala and highly emotional, we have less access to tools and strategies for doing things in a way that are cooperative and collaborative, right? And we're way more reactive. And it's not an excuse, but it is a place to find compassion. And I think you said under the surface, right? We talk about the iceberg in positive discipline. So it's like, what's going on underneath that?
Yes.
That is actually fueling and, you know, and in some ways promoting this behavior that we're hoping to change, or we're hoping they're going to change it.
Yes. 100%. And, you know, it really comes down to, no matter what that deficit is, and we're going underneath to try to figure it out, oftentimes my experience as being a teacher of nearly a quarter of a century and mentoring and all these things.
You have to say it like that, Doug.
Of course, I have to say it like that. Yeah.
I turned 50 this year, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. 50's the new 30. Come on, you know?
Oh, I feel it. I feel great.
Good. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have one more thing that I want to talk about before we wrap up, which is, and it has to do with kind of brain development. And you have this literal laboratory and you get to see, you know, most of us, it's our one or two or three kids. You get to see all of these kids.
Yes.
And, you know, you hear a lot about this age and how they are obsessed with themselves and their experience and their social situations. And couple that with being very black and white thinkers and often can't see past the end of their nose. Plus, they're having so many first experiences.
Right.
So they don't know, like, oh, there's another side to this, or, oh, I won't feel like this forever.
Yes.
How do you, in the teacher role, how do you support your kids in kind of expanding their perspective, expanding their view of themselves and the situations that they're in?
Right.
Especially when they're discouraged.
Right. Yeah. I mean, first, as a teacher, I like to get my students involved in project-based, community-based learning, real-world scenarios. And I want to involve them in stepping outside of their comfort zone. I oftentimes say, Casey, like I did today in class, we had a situation where they had to explain why this fish kill incident happened. And I said, you're going to have to come up in front of the room and tell the class. I said, so really,
it's a fish kill incident.
Oh yeah. It's when a series of just fish just die suddenly. And there's a lot of, they have to play these detective and look at data and try to put a timeline together, like how it happened. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's cool. So they have to be comfortable in the uncomfortable. That's what I tell them. And engaging them in real world scenarios where they can actually make a difference and be leaders. That's that next level we want from kids. So, before what I was going to say is the whole feeling of, I am not enough. I am not enough. And that's, it could be, I'm not enough, or I'm not getting enough love, or I'm just not worthy because I'm not feeling that love, or I'm just not as smart as the other. I'm not enough. That's that feeling inside. So to make them enough is to put them in a position where they can succeed, help them set goals, help them achieve little successes. So now all of a sudden it becomes a positive cyclical experience for them. Have them explore the power of being a global citizen and learning and caring and having the intention to help others. And really making a difference, you know. One example is, I got coming up, I got a plastic pollution interdisciplinary unit that I wrote for all the teachers on my team. We have it timeline and Gantt charted where the kids are going to go through. They're going to have a debate on this topic. They're going to be writing a position letter to Congress. They're going to really have that feeling of like, here's a PSA announcement and how I can help reduce like single-use plastics and what I can do to change the world. So from that vantage point, when you give kids different opportunities and their strengths and wheelhouses and make them leaders and empower them, that's how you win the ball game.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that mantra of getting comfortable in the uncomfortable. I was just working with a client today who has a seventh grader. And we were talking about just his seeming lack of tolerance around discomfort. And she and I were kind of playing with like some, you know, that self-reflection piece, that noticing. And I was sharing with her, you know, you can talk about kind of like a green, yellow, red growth zone, right? Green, you're not uncomfortable. You're good. You feel solid. You feel regulated. Yellow might be like, oh, I don't really want to do this, but I'll do it, right? I don't really love this, but I'm following through on it. Right? Which is such a beautiful place of growth. And then there's continuum even inside of the yellow, right? Red, I'm having a panic attack.
Right.
Right. So red isn't necessarily a growth zone. Green isn't a growth zone, but playing in the yellow, right? And I'm sharing this with you, but with listeners too, to give language, because I think we can say you have to be comfortable in the uncomfortable. And I'm going to give you experiences. And also creating scaffolding. How do you create scaffolding for, because one kid, I know for me, I'm like, what? You want me to get in front of the group? Okay. Do I get a mic? Like, how long do I have? Because I can talk for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's other people who are like, hell no, that is a red zone.
Yeah.
So how do you build scaffolding? What is your advice for building scaffolding around that growing tolerance of discomfort?
Yeah. That's a great question. in the classroom, depending on the activity I'm doing, it could be that one child gets a certain amount of like graphic organizers to help them organize themselves. Because a lot of kids can't do multi-step processing. They have executive functioning issues that they deal with. But we're working in a group for this fish kill, I was saying, and I wanted to strategically kind of put the groups together in a manner where some kids have certain strengths that they can help the other kids who have other areas of growth. And what happened was today, what was beautiful, is I had one group that said, we want to go first. We want to go first. And we was only two out of four of the kids. The other two went.
Yeah, me.
They're like, really? Yeah,
and then I was totally that kid.
Yep. And then the other two are just like, I don't know if I could do it. And then the other two are saying, come on, you could do it. You only have to say one of these factors. I'll say the other. This person will say the other. And then I came over. I said, guess what? You get it done first. You can breathe. You're done. I said, and it shows, and you can do it. And I know you can do it. So, and all of a sudden they went up there and we're going out during like a little recess time. And I said, Mr. Haddad, right next to me, did you like what I said? Were you proud of me? I said, I sure was. And I sure
That's am. Awesome.
So those kind of things by design, the grouping, the words of encouragement in the moment, you know, one-on-one in front of the group, and also the peer pressure positively helps.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I love your declaration of faith in them.
Oh,
you know, that's so powerful.
You're our future.
That's so powerful.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for how you support kids, Doug. Oh, I'm so glad you're out there doing your work.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I love it. It's no better job. I wake up in the morning every day. I'm like a kid in a candy store. I don't go to work. You know, I call it school and I call it impacting lives. So just, and they impact my life probably more than I do them. So,
it's so beautiful. So I have a final question that I ask all my guests, which is, what does joyful courage mean to you?
It's a mindset to me. And it's really a way to face obstacles and challenges with a positive, optimistic outlook. I know I find it feeling, I don't know, just the whole aspect of joy in overcoming challenges and obstacles and really embracing it head on. Again, feeling comfortable in the uncomfortable. There's the courage, you know, and having that joy in doing that, especially when you don't know where you're going. I think that's important. And you have no idea of the anticipated outcome.
Mm-hmm.
For me, going all the way to Abu Dhabi, I've never been out there before. And quite frankly, on the backside, and you know, probably like I did, we didn't get a lot of validation that who else is going? Where's this?
What is happening? I know.
What's happening?
Know. Blind faith.
Blind abyss. And I mean, look at what happened. That was one of the most incredible, you know, revolutionary things over in that area that, and I'm hoping that becomes a big wave for parents across the world, because the parents were really receptive over there. And we went on blind faith with what we had to offer. And you know, it really made a big impact over there.
Yeah, beautiful. Where can people find you and follow your work and what you're doing?
Yeah, so I have an official website, DouglasHaddad.com.
Okay.
Social media, all the goods, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. And I just recently wrote a book, if I could share it with—
Please do.
All right, cool. So here it is, Maya McClure, The Brave Science Girl, The Toad Cave. Talk about inspiration. My students have inspired me to write this book. My 4.5-year-old daughter was a huge inspiration. And it's just a story of courage, speaking of that conviction, compassion, and friendship, and really shows that when we unite together on a common mission, that anything is possible. And I think for girls out there specifically, I've seen such like a disparity of historically more males than females in STEM and STEAM-related professions. So girls out there, you have a voice. I want you guys to be change makers of the world and really lead the way toward a brighter tomorrow. And that's what this character is all about, Maya McClure. So you can find this on Amazon. You could find it at Barnes and Noble. And like I said, you could find me on my website. So thank you very much.
Yay. Thank you so much, Doug. This was awesome.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in today. Thank you to my Sproutable partners, as well as Chris Mann and the team at Podshaper for all the support with getting this show out there and making it sound good. Check out our offers for parents with kids of all ages and sign up for our newsletter to stay connected at besproutable.com. Tune back in later this week for our Thursday show, and I'll be back with another interview next Monday. Peace.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, Whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting Podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.